You're listening to Manx Radio, and I'm Judith Leigh, welcoming you to the podcast of The Manx Sky at Night with Howard Parkin.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are.
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
And that familiar music tells us that once again it is time to welcome Howard Parkin into the studio for this month's edition of The Manx Sky at Night. Fast am I, Howard.
Fast am I, Judith. It's great to be here again, as usual.
Well, I cannot believe how the weeks are flying by, and you won't be happy because clocks forward, more light, lovely for nighttime walking, but not good for stargazing.
Not good for stargazing. It's that time of the year when we don't get this. From now, it's not so bad now in April or late March, April, but once we get into May, June, July, it's there's just too much light around. So it's the time when we dust off our telescopes and clean them and fix them all and read the books and work out what we're going to look at for the next observing season, which starts roughly in about September. We always say the astronomical year for observing in the Isle of Man is September to April.
However, that being said, there are no shortage of exciting things to look out for.
Oh, indeed there are. Some really special exciting things going on at the moment.
What's top of your list, Howard?
Top of the list has got to be we've got a total eclipse of the sun taking place over the United States on the 8th of April, literally just a few weeks' time. It's actually on the Monday after Easter Monday. And it really is exciting because I'm fortunate enough, my wife and I are going to see the eclipse because we're going to Texas to see it. And it's the third time I've seen one. And you know, when you talk to anyone who's seen a total eclipse of sun, it is totally mind. It is changing. It is such a phenomenal spiritual, emotional moment. It really is breathtaking. And don't despair, Manx listeners, because we have got a total eclipse of the sun taking place over the Isle of Man.
Really?
Yeah. 2151.
Ah. Right. Young listeners, make a note in your diary.
Yeah. But that said, we have got a good total eclipse of the sun taking place over northern Spain on the 12th of August 2026. So that one is reachable relatively easily. So the first eclipse I ever saw was in 2006 in Turkey. And that was by a plane from Manchester. We went to see it. And so this next one in 2026 is worth looking out for. But back to the one we're seeing in a few weeks' time, it will be visible as a very small partial eclipse from the Isle of Man. You will see it. You need to be on the west coast. The sun, literally, the moon will start to move across the solar disk, literally about 3 or 4 minutes before sunset. It then reaches its maximum, which is about 4% only of the sun's disk will be covered, and then the sun will set. The sun and the moon will set together. So we will see it from the Isle of Man, and well worth looking out for. But please make sure you use eclipse glasses or use projection techniques. There's a whole host of methods by which you should look at the sun. Even the setting sun, and yes, we all love looking at the setting sun when it goes red and the ocean hisses when it hits the water and all this sort of stuff. But basically, be careful. Don't stare at the sun any length of time whatsoever unless you've got proper eclipse glasses. And incidentally, there's another great partial eclipse of the sun in March next year, 29th of March next year, which is almost exactly a year to the day, and that'll be a 50% eclipse. That isn't total anywhere on the Earth, but this particular one is total over Mexico, United States and Canada, and it peters out just before it gets to the British Isles as a total, but we will see the partial phase from Peel on the west coast of the island on April the 4th at around 8 o'clock at night, just before sunset. So hopefully, fingers crossed for clear skies, people will be able to see that and wonder at it. It won't be as spectacular as a total, I can't stress enough, but it's still worth seeing this celestial billiards, if you like, of the moon and the sun. You know, the sun is 400 times bigger than the moon, but 400 times further away. And as a consequence, the moon, on most occasions, when it passes between the Earth and the sun, when the orbits align up, it covers the sun completely and you get a total eclipse.
How weather-dependent is it for us to get the full power, or for anybody to get the full power of a total eclipse?
Totally. If you have got cloud cover, you might see it through thin cloud. I know people have seen eclipses through thin cloud before, but you don't get the effects. You really need blue on no clouds in the sky. And I've been very fortunate. I saw the one in 2006, I saw the one in 2017, and it was beautiful both times. But I do know of people who have been to see eclipses and it's clouded over at the wrong moment, or it's been thick cloud the whole time. If I can tell you, in 2005, we had a very good eclipse, partial eclipse of the sun visible from the Isle of Man. I went to Port Sodric Car Park to watch this one, which is a great location. thick cloud, heavy rain, you name it, we had the lot. And I was really, really cheesed off about that. But then one of my night school classes, Patrick Cowley, people know Patrick Cowley, Patrick sent me a newspaper article out the Daily Telegraph, Eclipse of the Sun from C-Day, Turkey, £300, including return flights from Manchester, one night dinner, bed and breakfast. So we went, and the rest is history.
I would guess that if you look at Mexico or Turkey or the United States, somewhere where they've got taken over all a more stable weather pattern than a small island, you probably stand a greater chance.
Much greater chance. And again, the time of the year is critical, so spring is better. I mean, I'm going to Texas because it is the best part of the United States to go. Mexico is probably better, but Texas is as good. And I think there's only a 30% chance of cloud, whereas I think if you go higher up the eclipse path, it's about 80% chance of cloud. And I know somebody who didn't come with us to Turkey in 2006 because he looked at the weather forecast and I think it was 50-60% chance of cloud. So he didn't come with us, and of course it was a glorious day and we saw it, and he was really pig sick when we came home and showed him all these wonderful photographs. I mean, the true story of this one, Judith, and people don't believe this story, but it is 100% true. For my 70th birthday, which was last year, my wife and I decided we'd have a trip on the Mississippi, and that's where we're going next week. I booked this trip on the Mississippi and we're really looking forward to going to New Orleans and going to Gracelands and all this sort of stuff. And that was the holiday and that was it, full stop, nothing to do with it. The whole thing was delayed 12 months because of circumstances. And it was only some time after I realised that we get to New Orleans on the 1st of April and the eclipse is the 8th of April in Texas, which is about 400 miles to the west. So I went home and told Mrs. Parkin, we're not coming home from New Orleans, we're going to spend a little bit of time in the United States. And that's what we're doing.
But it is extraordinary, because if you'd taken your 70th birthday celebratory holiday when you intended to take it...
Exactly.
If it would all have been done and dusted.
I would have done it this time last year.
Yeah.
And we'd have not done it. And yes, I would have seen the eclipse was taking place, but I probably wouldn't have gone.
No, you...
We're a week before. The perfect timing. I could not believe it when I realised.
It was meant to be,
and I really looked forward to it.
And actually, there is a way in which you're flying the Manx flag while you're there, because you've been spotted and you've been asked to speak, and you're badged up as a leading astronomer, an eclipse expert. So you've got an opportunity to wave the Manx flag.
Oh, I will be. And I have actually got my Manx flag is in my suitcase ready to fly. And I hope we'll get the chance. I'll get some pictures and I'll be sending you pictures and putting them on the website and all sorts of stuff.
You better had.
I certainly will.
Right, OK. So we're all eclipsed up to date. What else is going on, Howard?
Well, we've had some very good weather recently, but we have had some really clear nights. You know, I took my night school class to the observatory. I always take my night school class to the observatory at least once a year. This year, in February, the class went up to the observatory, and, you know, for the first time in 39 years, it was clear. We had a wonderful time. My lesson plan went out the window, and when I report back on the lesson plan, you have to fill in the documents, all the rest, stargazing at the James Martin Observatory, and we just looked for the telescope, and we looked at Jupiter, we looked at Orion, and we looked at all sorts of stuff. But what you do notice, Orion, and I've said this many a time, I'll no doubt say it again, when Orion falls over, when he is no longer rising in the eastern sky and standing due south, proudly upright with his belt sloping down to the left and up to the right. When he starts to fall over, spring is on the way. And Orion is well falling over now. He's heading towards the eastern horizon. The brilliant stars of winter are now setting in the west. And we're starting to look towards the eastern sky now and see the stars of the east. And a couple of nights ago, I went outside. I think I put some stuff in the bin, wherever it was. And I looked up and I thought, wow. And there were the three very bright stars of spring, the stars Arcturus, Regulus and Spica in the constellations of Boötes, Leo and Virgo, respectively. And I just stood there for a minute and thought, wow. Spring is on the way, and it was a lovely day. I mean, we've had some rotten days, but let's be honest, we've had a few decent days, and it is always a great sign. And if listeners want to look up at the sky, yes, look towards the western horizon, look towards Orion and the profusion of bright stars around there, including the planet Jupiter, but look towards the east. Far less stars, but three very bright ones do stand out. And these, as I say, this is Regulus in Leo and Spica in Virgo particular, and also Arcturus. And Arcturus is easy to identify. So how do we know which stars he's talking about? Easy. You all know, I hope by now, where the plough is. Most people know where the plough is. Follow the curve of the handle of the plough down, and you arc to Arcturus. and Arcturus is there. And then you follow the same line straight on to Spica, and Leo is up to the right. So that's how you identify these bright stars. And sometimes the stars Regulus and Spica get covered by the moon. The moon actually passes through the line on the ecliptic, where eclipses happen, to go back to eclipses. And sometimes those two stars get occulted by the moon. And that's always a spectacular sight to see. We haven't got that taking place at the moment. But just as I say, I think I say this every month, Judith, just go outside and enjoy the sky. And the contrast between the winter stars and the spring stars is quite dramatic. And it really is a sign that spring is on the way.
That and just more birdsong, being aware of more birdsong.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, when you were talking about the eclipse and you know, all the possibilities of seeing it and all the rest of it, which, of course, is absolutely right, the fact of the matter is, whatever we look at in the sky, whether it's just if the stars are particularly visible or whether you are able to see an eclipse, it's just the power of nature that does all of this by itself.
So.
It doesn't need any intervention from us.
No, it's clockwork, and you can predict eclipses. Every place on the earth will see an eclipse of the sun every 375 years. But think of the people who live in Carbondale in the United States. Two total eclipses in 7 years. I'm not green with envy. I'm fuming.
Oh dear. Is there anything else, Howard?
Yes, there is, of course. We talk about meteor showers all the time. I'm always talking about meteor showers. We have a whole host of different meteors, about a dozen meteor showers every year, which you can see. And apart from we see one very early in January, the Quadrantids, that's gone then. And there are no meteor showers then until we get to April. April the 22nd, we have the Lyrid meteor shower. Now, Lyra is one of those constellations that's also rising in the east. After the constellations of Virgo and Leo I spoke of earlier, Lyra is rising in the east. And the Lyrid meteor shower is usually very reliable, and you get a chance to see a few meteors. Unfortunately, the moon causes the spectre of the eclipse, great, but the full moon, 2 weeks after the eclipse, the full moon takes place just before the Lyrid shower peaks. So that's going to drown out all but the brighter meteors. But well worth looking out for. Just look to the eastern horizon around the 20th, 22nd of April. And if you see any shooting stars, those are, of course, from the Lyrid meteor shower, which peaks, as I say, this particular time, 22nd of April. And then we've got some other minor showers taking place before we hit the big one, which is, of course, the Perseids in August.
And that is a subject for another conversation. But I will just say, as we wind up this half, Howard, that once again, there have been some beautiful photographs posted online, haven't they, by really crack photographers.
Oh, very much.
But as you always say, sometimes these things are better captured with a specially set up camera than they are with the naked eye.
Oh, yes. Well, the aurora is a classic example of that. And we've had some great displays of aurora. I should have mentioned aurora earlier because it's probably going a little bit past the peak now. But the best observing season, which is around the time of the equinox, 21st of March. But the aurora in a camera is beautiful colours. For the naked eye, it's not. But it does get the movement. But there's nothing to be. To go back to my original comments, the best thing to do is just go outside and enjoy the sky, whether it's a meteor shower, eclipse, or just looking at the seasonal sky. It is breathtaking, and it's all natural. It's all to do with what the heavens are made of and everything else. And the fact that we're able to understand it to some degree just shows you how clever we are. But at the same time, it makes us very humble when we realise the power of the cosmos and all the things we get to see.
Cause we thing I can do, a total eclipse of the heart. Once upon a time there was light in my life, but now there's only love in the dark. Nothing I can say, a total eclipse of the heart.
Well, Bonnie Tyler didn't record Total Eclipse of the Sun, so we've had to settle for Total Eclipse of the Heart for our music break tonight. You're listening to this month's edition of The Manx Sky at Night with Howard Parkin, and in a moment we'll catch up on the latest space news. But first, it's Easter Sunday next weekend, even though it doesn't seem any time since Christmas. So, Howard, why does Easter keep jumping around?
It's simple. It's very, very simple. There's an astronomical reason for it, in case you might have guessed. All you've got to do is find out when the vernal equinox is, also known as the spring equinox, but of course in the southern hemisphere it's their autumn. So we call it the vernal equinox. This is when the sun crosses the celestial equator heading north to give us our wonderful summer days as opposed to our winter days. So when the sun crosses the celestial equator heading north, that's the moment of the vernal equinox. And the vernal equinox is always on the 21st or the 22nd of March. Are you with me? 21st, 22nd of March. The next full moon after that, which can in fact be that very day, the next full moon, the following full moon, the following Sunday will be Easter Sunday. So if the vernal equinox will say is the 22nd of March, and there's a full moon on the 23rd of March, and it's a Sunday the next day, then Easter Sunday will be the 24th of March. The other way around, if you've just missed the full moon, as it was the 21st of March and the equinox is the 22nd, you've got to wait 28 days and maybe another 7 to the Sunday, which is why it can be as late as the 22nd of April. So it's a little bit earlier, could be even earlier, but that's how it's worked out. The first full moon after the vernal equinox, the following Sunday, is Easter Sunday.
So now we know.
Now we know.
I can't guarantee that next year I'll be able to predict when Easter Sunday is going to be.
You just need to know when the full moon is.
Need to look in my diary. Right, now, from the wonderful Manx skies to a bit further afield, we are looking now at what is happening in the wider world, and that, of course, involves space and possibly even exciting things happening here on the island.
Well, Judith, I can tell you now, and this is official, and it hasn't, I don't think it's been publicised anywhere else, Do you remember about 20 years ago there was talk about the Alaman being the fourth most likely nation to return to the moon?
Yes.
We didn't quite make it. We were sixth. We are on the moon. The Isle of Man is on the moon. It's not an idle boast, it's a true boast. When Intuitive Machines landed on the moon, the soft landed on the moon, first American mission to the moon since 1972, when they landed on the moon, they were carrying on board that spacecraft some experiments for Chris Stott's company, Lone Star. And Chris has been very heavily involved with this particular company, Lone Star. It's his own company, of data processing and putting a data. The idea is you're going to put a data center on the moon, which you think all the things that happen on the Earth, things that could happen, if you've got your data protected away from the Earth, never mind earthquakes, wars or anything else, you've got your data preserved for all posterity. And one of the experimental packages on Intuitive Machines Lander, Odysseus, it's its other name, is a small package of experiments from Lone Star. And on that, there is a digital recordings of all sorts of things of the Isle of Man, because the company Lone Star are also an Isle of Man company as well, as based in Florida with Chris. But they've also got the Isle of Man Astronomical Society logo as well. So we're on the moon. We can truthfully say we are on the moon.
Well, that's not a bad boast, is it?
Absolutely. And we heard it first on your show, Judith.
Another first for Manx Radio.
Absolutely right.
And not only are we on the moon, but the moon is coming to us.
Indeed it is. Lovely link there, Judith. Yes, Peel Cathedral, which as most listeners know, is in the process of having extensive refurbishment, new floor and all sorts of stuff. People went and signed the floor the other week, and it really is an exciting project. They've been in touch with me. They're hoping to do, well, they're almost definitely going to do this project now called the Moon Project. And what that involves is a 7-metre diameter. Just think of 7-metre diameter. That's pretty big. A 7-metre diameter, fully illuminated globe of the moon hanging from the roof of Peel Cathedral. This is part of the Scientists and Christianity and Science and Religion project. And what they wanted to do, there's another project called Gaia, and that Gaia project is going elsewhere in the island, I believe, later this year. So they're going to put the moon one in the cathedral. And I've been asked to get involved and do all sorts of activities in astronomy and education and science and religion and all that sort of stuff. And the plan is at this stage, they're now making application as we speak. There's an application going in for this project because there's an expense involved. They're hoping to get some sponsorship, obviously. And then when it is assembled in the cathedral, it'll be there for about a month, 4 weeks or so. There'll be a whole host of different events taking place for youngsters, for maybe meals, lectures, all sorts of stuff. Very, very exciting. And if you just put the Moon Project into Google, and there's some wonderful photographs, and you'd swear one of them was Peel Cathedral. It was actually Winchester Cathedral I saw this particular image. It really is breathtaking. And it gives us the opportunity to invite people into the church, talk about faith, talk about religion, but also talk about science. Because the amount of scientists who are religious and vice versa is phenomenal. People don't think that's the case. People think scientists are atheists. That is not the case. And I stress this when I do my talks. An awful lot of scientists believe strongly in God and a faith and everything else. And I'm excited to be involved with this. And I'm really looking forward to seeing it and being involved.
Well, it's going to be something that we'll be talking about a lot more. And this really is exactly what the cathedral is being remodeled for now, to make it a space for the whole community,
yeah, exactly,
for everybody to enjoy and benefit from, and to be able to host things like this that wouldn't be appropriate in other buildings because they haven't got the height or the space.
It's a community outreach project, yeah, and it includes science and religion, of course, as two of the mainstays,
yeah,
of it.
So what else, Howard? What else?
Well, the other news is we've got a Manx visitor up in space at the moment. And this is a lovely story because way back in 2012, when Nicole Stott went into space for her final mission, STS-133 and the Discovery Shuttle, they were invited the following year to be guests of Timworld. And five of the six crew came to the island. They gave lectures in the Villa Marina. They went to see Ronald Sway aircraft where they make the ejector seats. They did a whole host of things. One of the chaps, Dr. Michael Barrett, he still works for NASA and he's just been launched up to the International Space Station literally a few weeks ago. And I was asked by his liaison team in Florida to send them images and greetings and all the rest to greet them because they're in the space for about 3 months, 4 months or so. Well, Mike, when he was here, very famously, and it can be found on the internet, there's a program called the Engines of Ingenuity. When we took Mike to Laxey Wheel, he was absolutely blown away with Laxey Wheel. So we've got the guy up in space at the moment who knows all about Laxey Wheel, and he actually did a radio program all about it, about the great Laxey Wheel. And he did that program. So what I've done, I was asked to do a video broadcast for him. So I've done a video broadcast from Laxey Wheel and just said, Mike, I hope you've had a good flight. You might remember this thing behind your Laxey Wheel. Give us a shout when you're flying over and all the best of luck for your flight. And that was all I did. And I've had a response from him to say, fantastic, he remembers us well.
Well, now, it's all very well to save the best till last, but there's a serious danger we're going to run out of time, Howard, before we talk about that amazing Starship launch. And was it an amazing launch?
Judith, it was incredible. It was actually, I thought at first it was going to be 100% successful, which would have been an enormous achievement. In the end, the first stage worked brilliantly, the staging worked okay, and the rocket was pushed to not quite orbital velocity. And then the Starship itself, they lost contact with it as it went over the Indian Ocean, and so it was lost then. It was going to get lost anyway. It was never meant to come back, but they've learned so much from it because the flight was longer than they'd ever had. An actual spokesman for the company actually said that this great design helps us learn how space travel works and we can improve it every single time. And I think it's demonstrated SpaceX now that their ability to launch this thing is getting better with each attempt. The Starship motto, the SpaceX motto, is to launch it, break it, and learn from it. Three times they've tried this now, and three times they've got more and more successful. It's a great achievement. When you consider the size of the payload or the Starship itself, it's capable of carrying 100 people into space when it's fully fitted out and fully operational. And then it won't be long till that's happening. NASA are waiting for this particular vehicle to prove its flight worthiness so they can actually use it to land on the moon, which is potentially going to take place about 26, 27. So much going on with Starship. The media, unfortunately, if they don't see it working 100% successfully, they call it a failure. Well, it's not. It was a great success. And SpaceX, the guys who are running the operation, they're very happy with what they've learned. And let's just wait and see what the next one brings. And they're talking already of maybe launching two or three of them before the end of this year. Let's just wait and see. But I'm very excited about it. I look forward to hearing and learning what's going on next.
Howard, as always, it is a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you much indeed for bringing us some insights into our own sky and the wider world. Howard Parkin, Fast Am I.
Fast Am I, Judith. The Nation State.